This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
When you're facing the death penalty for allegedly murdering four college students, you'd think your defense strategy would be kind of straightforward. Prove you didn't do it. Or at least create enough doubt to save your life. But what if your approach was to hire experts who normally help convict people like you, spend hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars challenging the very scientific methods that solved the case, and essentially declare war on modern forensic investigation? That's exactly what's happening in one of the most watched murder cases in recent memory. Brian Koberger's defense team has hired a cell phone tracking expert who has testified for law enforcement over 100 times, but has never worked for a defense team. Cy Ray built a career helping prosecutors use cell phone data to convict defendants, and now he's testifying that Koberger's phone data shows he was nowhere near the crime scene when four University of Idaho students were murdered, which is the exact opposite of the data that the prosecution is going to be presenting. But that's what's happening right now in the Brian Koberger case. One of the most elaborate defense strategies I think we have seen. But, you know, when you got to throw things at the wall and see what sticks, this is what you get. For those just catching up, Brian Koberger allegedly killed four University of Idaho students in November of 2022. Ethan Chapin, Madison Mogan, Zana Kernodle, and Kaylee Gonzalez. They were stabbed to death in their off-campus home while two roommates slept downstairs, apparently unaware of the carnage happening above them. The prosecution built what seemed like a solid case around DNA evidence from a knife sheath found at the scene, cell phone data allegedly placing him near the house, and a white Hyundai Elantra matching his car caught on surveillance footage. Police used investigative genetic genealogy to identify Koberger, confirm the match with DNA from his family's trash, and arrested him at his parents' home in Pennsylvania. It was textbook modern police work, the kind of investigation that typically results in plea bargains rather than protracted trials. But Chief Public Defender Ann Taylor had some other plans. Taylor is one of only 13 attorneys in Idaho qualified to handle death penalty cases, and she's systematically dismantling every piece of evidence and investigative technique, well, at least attempting to, that has been used to build the case against Koberger, you know, like a defense attorney should do. But the wrecking ball she's coming in with may be more like a bouncy ball than it actually is a true wrecking ball. Let's start with a key piece of the strategy. Koberger's defense hired Cy Ray, the former Arizona cop who built a company called ZX that specializes in cell phone tracking. He sold that company to LexisNexis in 2021 for an undisclosed amount and has testified as an expert witness over 100 times, almost exclusively for prosecution teams. This makes him the last person you'd expect to find working for a murder defendant, although it can't have been easy pickings to find somebody to back up anything Koberger has going on. Now Ray is claiming that his analysis shows Koberger's phone was actually in the opposite direction from the crime scene during the murders. According to Ray, the data indicates Koberger was south of Pullman, Washington, and west of Moscow, Idaho, when the killings allegedly occurred. Ray also criticized law enforcement's data collection during pretrial hearings, called it disorganized and incomplete. When someone who's built their career helping prosecutors convict people suddenly starts finding comprehensive fault with police work on his first defense case, it raises questions about the circumstances of that change. The defense explanation for where Koberger actually was reads like a meditation guide for insomniacs. They claim he was out driving in the early morning hours as part of a long habit of going for drives alone to hike and run to see the moon and the stars. That's the alibi. This raises obvious questions. If you're regularly out driving alone at 3 a.m. to contemplate nature, why do you need to hire a specialized cell phone expert to prove it? And why does someone pursuing a PhD in criminology allegedly develop such a nocturnal habit right around the time four people get murdered nearby? Ray's credibility has been questioned before. A Colorado judge in 2022 found what he called a sea of unreliability and ZX's technology, excluding it from a stalking case and finding that Ray was not a credible witness. The judge noted that Ray inflated his credentials, inaccurately claiming to be an engineer, and had testified he was more of an engineer than an engineer. Okay. The court found that ZX's methods had been routinely and sharply admonished by the scientific and legal community. So there's that. Ray represents one part of the defense's expert witness strategy. The defense has assembled multiple specialists, each tasked with challenging different aspects of the prosecution's case. Enter Bika Barlow, a California attorney who claims to have led the first successful challenge to STR DNA evidence in American courts. Barlow became a full attorney on the case in February of 24, meaning Idaho taxpayers are now funding out-of-state legal expertise. Her specialty is challenging investigative genetic genealogy, or IGG, the same technique that's been used to solve cold cases like the Golden State Killer and bring justice to victims' families after decades of waiting. The contrast is notable. Investigative genetic genealogy, IGG for short, maybe we'll call it that going forward, has been a game changer for law enforcement. It solved cases that had gone cold for decades. The technique works by taking crime scene DNA and comparing it to public genetic genealogy databases. You know, like 23andMe or Ancestry or those ones, all to identify potential relatives of the perpetrator, then building family trees to narrow down suspects. It's the reason people like the Golden State Killer finally faced justice. But now Barlow is arguing that using this technique to solve a quadruple murder somehow violated the right of the person who allegedly committed that quadruple murder. She's claiming that law enforcement violated both legal standards and the terms of service for genetic genealogy databases, which did none of the above. There is no terms in there that says you violated, and nor does it matter, quite honestly, in a case like this. Supporting this effort is Dr. Leah Larkin, a genetic genealogist who filed an affidavit questioning the reliability of genetic genealogy databases, and Gabriela Vargas, who previously helped solve the 34-year-old Roxanne Wood murder case, but is now testifying about potential violations in how law enforcement accessed genealogy databases. After Vargas testified for the defense, the FBI started asking questions about her involvement, which the defense characterized as intimidation. The DNA challenge team also includes Dr. Greg Hampikian. This is a hard one. Hampikian. We'll go with Hampikian for now. Founder of the Idaho Innocence Project, who has helped exonerate over 30 wrongfully convicted people. Well, Hampikian's work with wrongfully convicted people is admirable. It's worth remembering that for every person wrongfully convicted using flawed DNA evidence, there are hundreds who were correctly convicted using the same techniques he now questions. Beyond technical challenges, the defense enlisted mental health experts to argue that Koberger's autism diagnosis should exempt him from the death penalty. Dr. Rachel Orr diagnosed Koberger with autism spectrum disorder level 1, documenting defects in social emotional reciprocity and difficulty with social cues. The defense argued that executing someone whose brain is wired differently creates an unconstitutional risk that he would be executed because of his disability rather than his culpability, which again is a lot of BS. Judge Stephen Hippler ruled in April that the autism diagnosis doesn't automatically disqualify Koberger from the death penalty consideration, recognizing that while mental health considerations are important, they don't automatically excuse someone from the consequences of allegedly murdering four innocent people, no matter how awkward you might be at a singles mixer. The defense also summoned character witnesses from Koberger's academic past, including Dr. Michelle Bulger, his former criminology professor, who described him as one of their best students ever. There's something deeply ironic about having a criminology professor testify for someone accused of committing the exact type of crime they studied together. Perhaps the most audacious aspect emerged during a May 25 hearing when the defense filed an offer of proof suggesting alternate perpetrators. The filing was immediately sealed, but defense attorney Ann Taylor indicated they found alternate suspect information and claimed to have evidence suggesting two people committed the crime with two weapons. Judge Hippler demanded more substantive evidence suggesting even the court is skeptical about whether this theory has any sort of merit. The alternative perpetrator, and that theory represents the defense's boldest gambit yet. Instead of just arguing that the prosecution's case has flaws, they're claiming they've identified the real killers. You know, like OJ. It's extraordinarily risky because it requires the defense to essentially solve the murders themselves while defending someone who allegedly committed them. It also raises ethical questions about accusing other people of murder without having to prove those accusations in court. The comprehensive defense strategy has already suffered significant setbacks. In February 25, Judge Hippler denied all 13 motions to suppress key evidence, including DNA from a trash pull at Koberger's parents' home and challenges to search warrants. The judge's ruling that no constitutional violations occurred in the investigative genetic genealogy process particularly damaged the defense's efforts to exclude DNA evidence entirely. These rulings suggest that despite the expensive expert testimony and elaborate challenges to forensic techniques, the fundamental evidence collection followed established legal procedures. When a judge reviews the defense's technical objections and finds them insufficient to suppress evidence, it indicates the challenges may be more about creating confusion than actually identifying genuine procedural violations. The case has been complicated by strategic media manipulation as well, I guess if that's what you want to call it. I like to call it reporting. When a May 2025 NBC Dateline episode featured previous unreleased surveillance footage and cell phone records, the defense immediately filed motions claiming gag order violations. Represents a calculated effort to control the narrative while the defense can't speak directly to media due to gag orders. The financial aspects are staggering. Ann Taylor is being compensated allegedly around $200 per hour for a 40-hour work week, totaling $8,000 weekly. Her second seat attorney allegedly receives $180 per hour, and investigators are paid $45 per hour, allegedly. The case has been ongoing for over 2 years with no end in sight, and the total cost will likely exceed what many small towns spend on their entire justice system. What makes this defense strangely troubling is how it weaponizes legitimate scientific debate for legal advantage. Of course, that is what, you know, defense teams often have to do. Try to create reasonable doubt for the jury. Every forensic technique has limitations and potential sources of error, which is why scientific scrutiny is important. But there's a difference between genuine scientific inquiry and hiring experts to find fault with methods that have successfully solved thousands of cases. The irony is that some of the same experts now questioning these techniques have previously used them successfully. Ray built his career helping prosecutors use cell phone data to convict defendants. Vargas used genetic genealogy to solve cold cases, and now they're being paid to argue against the reliability of those specialties. Raises fundamental questions about whether financial incentives can influence scientific opinions. The trial is set to begin August 11th of 25 in Ada County after a successful venue change that added travel and accommodation costs. The defense has succeeded in transforming what investigators considered a solved case into an expensive examination of every forensic technique used, shifting focus from four dead college students to abstract questions about scientific methodology. The case represents a troubling precedent for what happens when defense attorneys have unlimited resources to challenge established investigative techniques, regardless of how successful those techniques have been in bringing justice to other victims. The outcome will determine whether established scientific methods can withstand enough money being thrown at questioning them, and whether our justice system can distinguish between legitimate scientific concerns and expensive questions. Win or lose, the defense has already cost taxpayers a fortune while questioning scientific methods that have solved countless other cases and brought closure to victims' families. They've turned a case about four murdered college students into an expensive academic exercise about forensic science, and that transformation might be the most troubling outcome of all. The question now is whether a jury will see through the expensive challenges to focus on the evidence, or whether enough money and expert testimony can create reasonable doubt about anything, no matter how solid the science is behind it. It's a lot of questions that are going to be coming up in this case. A lot of smoke, a lot of mirrors that are going to be needed to try and vindicate Brian Koberger. At the end of the day, though, it's the science that matters, the real science that matters, not just waving your hands going, well, maybe this could, but yeah. He bought the murder weapon. His DNA is on the sheath. He tried to buy a replacement sheath and knife right after the murders. There's a lot there. There's definitely a lot there. And his personality, his own words, they don't seem to help him very much either. What are your thoughts? Tell me in the comment section on YouTube. If you're listening to us on a podcast platform, be sure to check out our YouTube channel as well, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and subscribe so you can watch us doing the show and also interact and let your voice be heard as well. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you guys for watching. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.